In 1900, the United States government enacted the first federal law designed to protect wildlife, the Lacey Act, which prohibited interstate commerce of animals killed in violation of state game laws. In 1918, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act made it illegal to hunt, pursue, take, capture, kill, or sell any migratory birds without proper licenses. Being a federal treaty act entered into with Canada and then in 1936 with Mexico, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act overrode provisions of state law. That's why people need to have just a state license to hunt most wildlife, but must also have a federal permit to hunt waterfowl and most other migratory birds. In 1966, Congress passed the Endangered Species Preservation Act, which permitted the listing of native U.S. animals as endangered and provided limited protections for those animals. The Lacey Act was entirely focused on interstate commerce, and that first Endangered Species Act did not address many of the root causes of species declines. And so in February 1973, President Richard Nixon called on the 93rd United States Congress to pass comprehensive endangered species legislation. Concerns about endangered wildlife were so widespread and bipartisan that Congress quickly responded with a completely rewritten law, the Endangered Species Act of 1973, which Nixon signed into law that very same year on December 28th. In a 1978 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court found that, quote, the plain intent of Congress in enacting the Endangered Species Act was to halt and reverse the trend toward species extinction, whatever the cost. Almost as quickly as it was enacted, people started fighting against species protections when their economic interests were at stake. Presidents Reagan and George W. Bush's administrations were famous for their efforts at cutting back protections, but even Democratic presidents haven't done much to strengthen protections. And now the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has announced a new interpretation of the act that retreats from the conservation ethic that provided much of the strength of the act as originally passed. Now a species can be completely disappearing over a large swath of its range without qualifying for protection as long as there is a viable population somewhere. Following this new definition, bald eagles would not have qualified for protections back in the 1970s and 80s because their numbers were still relatively strong in Alaska. Although the gray wolf has been lost from 85% of its historical range, it is in the process of losing all endangered species protections because its numbers are considered strong in that last 15% of its range. I'm sure oil and gas corporations appreciate this new interpretation, which will allow them to further destroy habitat essential to sage grouse, which have declined by more than 95% since the 1960s. Our schools have never been required to teach students about natural resources, including the very species on which local and regional economies depend, so moneyed interests can easily confuse the public. I've read about people claiming prairie chickens and sage grouse can easily be raised in captivity to be protected from extinction. They call them chickens to make people think they're not very different from domestic chickens. I think people are just as concerned about endangered species as we were in the 1970s, but now we have a much stronger sense that there's nothing we can do to reverse trends and prevent losses. Back in the 1960s, I'd read Reader's Digest articles about how people in the Soviet Union felt utterly helpless in the face of bureaucracy and the powerful Communist Party ruling their government. Today's Americans are feeling equally helpless in the face of bureaucracy and corporate powers ruling our government. We, the people, can move forward to preserve and protect our country's rich natural heritage, but only if we start believing, as we did in the 1970s, that we can. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.